Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, look at this morning. Look at this morning. You know, here's the thing. So I'm riding my bike down through the, you know, at just the right pace, underneath the live oaks. The live oaks over a canopy over the road. Not much traffic. The big towering pines all over Midtown. Just beautiful to see. And you know, there were all these familiar faces. There was Koromo Shikibu. And there was Formosa, and there was Pride of Mobile, and there was Mrs. Gigi Gerbing, and there was George Lindley Tabor. Man, I hadn't seen George Lindley Tabor in a year. And there was Kissimmee. I thought, oh my goodness, somebody knows what they're doing. They planted Kissimmee. Kissimmee and all the beautiful azaleas just everywhere, just an incredible morning. Incredible morning. You know, it for a second... For a fleeting second, I thought, you know, could I be in the Azalea City? It was a passing moment. I realized, you know, this doesn't happen everywhere in the Azalea City anymore. We've forgotten what the Azalea City is, but boy, it's spring. It's there. The azaleas are about to break out, and they're really going to be nice. They're going to be beautiful. I think it's better. They're about 2 weeks early. They are about 2 weeks early, but that's okay. That's okay. They're still going to be beautiful this year. I think they're a little better when they bloom on cycle about mid-March, but, you know, it's 2 weeks early. They're going to be great. They're going to be beautiful. I think it's just really nice to see. I'm very pleased with it. If we don't get too much rain and if the temperatures will stay a little bit cool, we'll see. But it's beautiful out there. It's spring. You know, it's the season of strange birds, too, I will have to say. It's the season of strange birds. They're beginning to show up all around the yard. It's really fun. So I'm out cleaning up, getting some beds ready. You know, I've had these mulch piles forever. I actually put wood in them, and it was kind of messy. Cleaned it all off. All the wood's decayed, or a huge percentage of that wood is decayed, and it's this incredibly deep, rich soil. There's all sorts of worms and other things in it. Just beautiful soil. The soil is my pride and joy. It is just beautiful stuff. And there's a kingbird. I mean, he's sitting right over my shoulder. He's not 15 feet from me, sitting there saying, okay, go ahead and dig something else. Dig something else for me. And as soon as I turn my back, he just pops right down beside me, picks up a worm and runs off. Picks up a slug, whatever. Picks up the little grubs and other things. He's just loving it. There were catbirds. There were all sorts of birds moving through. It's the great, strange season of birds along the Gulf Coast. We get to see these birds. Don't get to see them all year long. We get to see them now. It's a lot of fun. And one of the interesting things is I don't know who's doing it. But every now and then, and I just respond this way. So somebody sings a tune, some bird. I don't know which bird. I don't know what the tune is. I don't know how to connect it to a bird, but there'll be a tune, and it'll just start me singing. And I just can't stop. I just take those first few notes, and I just go with it. And I'm just whistling all day long because it's the season of strange birds. In what was once the Azalea City. And it's a beautiful time on the Gulf Coast. It's time to think about planting, and we're gonna think about that. Is it ripe for tomatoes? You know, I think this year we got to do it. I think we got to do it this week, and I think it doesn't make too much sense to wait. So I hope you've started your tomatoes, and I hope they're sizable. If they're not, let's talk about it. We'll figure it out. But yeah, it's time, folks. It's time for the tomatoes. It is certainly time for planting corn. It's certainly time for planting cosmos. It's certainly time for planting marigolds. It's time to get the petunias out straight into the yard. It is time for a whole lot of things. You could wait on the peppers for a little while, but if they're, well, let me add this. If they're bell peppers, it's time. It's time to get them out. We need to, and I have to remind you of this because things aren't as stable sometimes now as they used to be. They've always been a little quirky in spring, but now maybe things are a little more unstable. We're getting these early flushes of warm weather, and then we can sometimes late in March and into early April, we can get something that just creeps up on us and just scares the patootie out of us. Does a number on the tomatoes. And so we could get another cold spell, but you can't wait at this point. You can't wait on that potential cold spell to clear out. Because if you do, the heat, which is expanding in summer, the heat of summer, which those hot nights, they're going to slap you right in the face before you get any tomatoes, before you get your bell peppers. So you got to go ahead and plant. You got to get them planted now. If you have questions about precisely what to plant, well, you can just call me and we can talk about them specifically. Corn, whatever, beans. Now's the time to plant. One of the things I am always reminding people is that seeds don't cost you much. They don't. They're pennies. You know, it's pennies for a row of corn. It's amazing how inexpensive good, even really good seed can be. If you find the right seed, a row of beans, it's pennies. So go ahead and get them planted now. Even if you're one of those people who's fretful about frost, because all you got to do is just drop a few more seeds in the ground if something happens. If you're planting tomatoes and you're buying transplants, you know, it's a little trickier because you spend a good bit of money on those transplants if you didn't start them from seed. I could argue why you should have started from seed, and we can talk about that. It's a little too late for seed now. Too late for seed on tomatoes. Seed on everything else. Too late for seed on tomatoes. But you're going to need transplants now, and so you're going to put those out, and you might say, well, gosh, I don't want to have to – that was expensive. I don't want to lose that transplant. Well, here's the thing. When you're planting, and I think we're going to be fine here for the next couple or three weeks, maybe even at least a couple of weeks, 10 days to 2 weeks, I think you're going to be fine. I don't see anything on the horizon. The chances of something really cold happening diminish in the last third and fourth week of March greatly, but it doesn't overwhelm it. It doesn't overcome it entirely, and particularly with the new climate regime. So we need to be careful about figuring out how to cover these plants. And that's one thing we can do. It's so simple to do. And so I might, at this point, if you're ready to put your tomatoes out, go ahead and put them out and order you a wall of water. It's one of the simplest things you can ever do. You call me and ask me what a wall of water is. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about how to get it. And they work really well, and they're really simple. But you don't even have to do that. You don't want to order something. You don't want to buy something. You just, I'll help you get started on something that'll protect those tomatoes. Put your tomato cage up, wrap the backside of it in a little fabric, or get ready to wrap the whole thing in fabric. It'll make a ton of difference. It'll make a ton of difference if it gets cold. There's 1,000 ways to protect that tomato from cold. There's no way to protect it from summer heat. None at all. You can't do it. It's just there. So you got to think now. How do we get those tomatoes ready to go? This is the time of year to do it. It's the time of year to get started on that. It's really just this beautiful season here along the Gulf Coast. We got lots of things to talk about, lots of things to plant, lots of things to get ready for. Give me a call this morning. Let's talk about it. 251-343-0106. One of the great pleasures this morning, and one of the things I look forward to, is I have this great excuse for getting my good friend John Olive out of the woods. Well, he's in the woods. He's going to talk to us from the woods, because it's a great day to be in the woods, too. And he's going to call in. We're going to talk a little bit about some citrus problems that we had last year, which we're still trying to figure out, and maybe a few other things, if I can keep him from having fun for long enough here on the radio. So my good friend John Olive with Auburn University is calling in. You may be able to call in and ask him some questions about your citrus if you have any other questions. We're going to talk about that this morning. But gosh, just what a great day to be out and do gardening. What a great day to get set up for it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what you need to do. Just give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. It's the time of strange birds. It's the time of azaleas blooming. All of these beautiful azaleas blooming right now. It's the time the camellias, the last camellias are doing beautifully this year, aren't they? They're doing really beautiful in this late spring, this late flush for them. Give us a call. Let's talk about it.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Garden. Lots to do this morning. Lots to do today. Lots to talk about. And lots for you to do. It is the time of spring planting. It really is the time to get your tomatoes out. There's just no question in my mind that now is the day. Today is the day. I don't think you could do better than today. Period. Soil's warming up. You've had a couple of days of warm soil. The moisture's out of the soil a little bit so that it's had a chance to warm up. It's going to stay pretty warm this coming week. There's just no excuse not to go ahead and plant those tomatoes this week, and I think the timing's going to be right. We do need to add a little bit of protection for those tomatoes in case there is a late cold spell. It ain't going to happen soon. It's going to happen late. You can't wait for that to happen, because if you do, you're not going to have tomatoes. It's just that simple, because you can protect them from cold, but you can't protect them from summer heat. And the summer heat is more destructive, actually, in a lot of ways on tomatoes than the cool temperatures we have this time of year. So we got to get them out. And for the most part, things are going to be working really well for you. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about how to do it. If you want to talk about varieties, we'll talk about that. Let's talk about that this morning, what you should plant, what I'm planting. I'll be glad to tell you about it. It's a lot of fun to talk about what I'm planting because I'm excited about it. And you may be interested in it, too. So give me a call. We'll talk about it. Brian, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Love your show, Mr. Bill.
Thank you, sir.
I purchased some cassia.
Yeah.
In 3-gallon pots.
Yeah.
They're very leggy, long, about 4 feet tall. They do have some growth coming out at the base. I'm just wondering if it's too late to cut them back. And just let that bottom growth take over.
You know, I could almost ask you what kind of cassia, and probably I should, but the truth is, for your question, I think you'll be fine, regardless of the kind of cassia it is. Go ahead and cut it back. Many of them get killed back over the winter anyway, and come back from the roots. Many varieties do. But yeah, the tops get killed back, and they come back from the roots. So, you know, you're starting where most people start anyway. They'll just prune those cassias back in spring, and then you'll have a nice bush. Do you know which species or variety of cassia it is?
I don't. They didn't have a tag on them.
Yeah. So there's a lot of them. And they all perform differently, but you're in good shape. All of them should do fine for you now. Winter hardiness is different depending on which cassia you have. Size is different depending on which cassia you have. But you're going to be fine for this year. I think that's what I would do. If it were my plants and they were a little leggy now, I'd say, you know, they got a lot of growing to do before they bloom.
Okay.
And I just cut them back.
And what I cut back, when I take those and try and root those, you know, there's a lot of branches up top.
What an interesting question. I haven't rooted cassia before, but it ought to be pretty easy. What I might do, just for insurance, is take some of the more limber branches, the limber twigs, the limber sprouts, pull them down so that you don't break them, just pull them down to the ground, bury them so that 6 inches of the tip is exposed, but bury a little piece of the stem, put a little staple down or something to hold it down, put some dirt over that, a little piece of about 6 inches of stem. You can nick the stem with
your... I've done that with azaleas.
Yep, there you go. So you know how to do it.
Put a brick on them.
Yep, and that way you'll be able, I think you'll be able to propagate those better, and then you can take the others and just because they're going to be, and I think the softwood cuttings are going to be too soft, but they may root as from semi hardwood or hardwood cuttings. So you can just lay the whole things into a bed of mulch and see if they develop any roots at the nodes.
Okay, that'd be a good experiment.
Yeah, but I'd do both and. And the only other thing, you know, I'm curious, and none of it matters much. You'll get to discover it as the summer goes on. Some of them won't bloom until fall. Some cassias don't bloom until you get short days, by the way. So okay. They're not really going to bloom much until fall when the days shorten. And they may be blooming now because the days are short and they're still alive, but they may not bloom again. They may quit about late April and then not pick up again until fall. Others will bloom during the long days of summer. And depending on which variety you have, it could do both. I prefer the ones that actually, the prettiest ones to me are the ones that bloom on the short days in fall. They can be really beautiful, and I suspect that's what you have. So don't be upset if you don't see blooms this summer.
Well, can I tell what variety they are by the types of leaves they have? Or?
Yeah, you know, and if I could have an immediate visual scorecard in front of me, I could help you. But I'm not, you know, it seems to me that the candlestick cassias, which do bloom during summer, have, I remember having bigger leaves, slightly bigger leaves. So if they have pretty fat leaves that are bigger than a 50-cent piece consistently, I think you're looking at cassia, at the summer blooming cassias, if I'm remembering correctly. And if the leaves are generally smaller than a 50-cent piece, does anybody remember what a 50-cent piece looks like anymore?
Okay, they're pretty small.
Yeah, so I think you've got a fall blooming cassia.
Okay.
Yeah, about the size of a quarter. Each individual leaflet's about the size of a quarter. And whereas the candlestick cassias have much bigger leaflets. So it'll probably, you'll get a little bit of bloom out of it now. So, all right, let's go back. So now I've talked myself into making this more complicated. You ready for this?
Okay.
So you may get some bloom this spring because it's short days. So see if you get a little bit of bloom in March and April, just so you'll have the bloom.
Okay.
And once you get
I just noticed there's some pods on there too, a couple of pods. So it looks like I can get some seeds from them also.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, let it hold on until April, about mid-April, then cut it back.
Okay.
Yeah, and that way, if it's blooming, you can let it. You know, you'll enjoy those blooms now because it's not going to bloom during summer.
And it won't hurt to cut it back in April then.
No, it won't. It'll have a well-established root system. By that time, it'll probably be even better to cut it back then.
Okay. Anything I need to do to that where I do cut it when I cut it back?
No, sir, not a thing you can do, really. It's not a thing you can do. Those plants are pretty good at repairing damage. They don't spread to the roots. They're tropical. They're going to be fine. And they will resprout, but not from the same branch. They're going to resprout from the roots, probably. They're going to be a little bit of a stoloniferous kind of thing.
All right, well, thanks for all your help.
Yeah. Let me know how it goes.
I listen to it every Sunday.
All right, Brian. It's good to hear from you.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye. So there it is. And so John Olive was having this perfectly wonderful, great day in the woods, just enjoying himself. And I call him. And I said, John, I need your help. And it's good. I mean, I would have no other excuse for bothering John in the woods except that I have a legitimate question. And so I get to bother him, which is really a great pleasure to bother John. John, what's it like where you are?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's cool and clear. There's no bugs.
it's a great day to be outside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm telling folks to go ahead and get their tomatoes in the ground, John.
Yes, it is. The sooner the better. We still could have some cold weather, but if you're going to get any nice big tomatoes, then you got to get them in early.
Yep, that's right. John Olive is, you know, I go to ask John questions because John is the expert. He's the disease specialist from Auburn University. And we talk a lot about a lot of different things, and so it's always fun to have him. And I could tie him up for the whole show, which we're not going to do because he's in the woods and he's enjoying himself. But one thing I did say to John is that we need to talk about a citrus issue that we had that a caller had. And John, I don't know how to describe it, but Vanna has called me for about 4 weeks running. Saying, you've got to tell me it's the craziest thing she's ever seen. And the citrus was just full of bumps. It didn't have, and John and I kind of pre-talked this thing, it didn't have, because we were expecting, if you say bumps, we're thinking, oh, well, maybe some this or that. But the bumps didn't have any color to them. They just were the color of the citrus skin. They weren't brown. They weren't silver. John, I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, Bill, you've probably, and I don't have the advantage of hearing what you've told her before, but you've probably told her everything I'm going to tell you. the first thing that comes to mind when somebody calls me and I don't have a picture, I don't have anything to look at, when they're talking about bumpy fruit is citrus scab, and that's a fungal disease that attacks the leaves and the fruit, and sometimes it will show up early just as on the fruit, but it is causes bumpy fruit. But normally with that, you see some silvery, lesions in correlation with those bumps.
Yeah,
the
and
the other possibility is that it's just sometimes fruit, just physiologically, we see it a lot on trees that don't produce a lot of fruit, young trees, or in a year that causes something odd. You get that puffy fruit in addition to that, you can just get some large citrus fruit or some citrus fruit that has bumps on it and has that kind of rugose or bumpy fruit. But it doesn't sound like that's what it is from what you described.
Yeah, well, I don't know, and I'm kind of leaning towards the latter. I just don't see any of the lesions. I would worry a little bit about citrus scab, and I would have told her, yeah, you might need to think about this. Though I'm not really sure I've ever treated citrus scab, so I'm not sure what to tell her.
Well, the there's a lot of information online, and to give any recommendations without when I'm not looking at something
right.
in writing. So,
right.
But there's some easy, and you want to treat for it early. So it's something you need to be thinking about now in the next month or so, using some coppers, I think is what they're going to be wanting to use. But
and they're pretty safe,
you can spray early.
Yeah. It's safe for you, if not for the tree. But yes.
Yeah.
So that'd be great. And so I'm gonna, if Anna calls us back, and you won't be on, but I'll tell her on the citrus scab. John, one last question: how are we looking on these bad citrus diseases? You know, because I don't want to know in a way, but I'm worried about things like citrus canker, and I'm worried about things like green dragon, the big bad citrus diseases. How are we on that?
Well, I don't want to be too negative, and I don't want to be too positive. It's difficult for us because we're unique. Where it showed up before in California, and it's spreading so bad, and in Florida, where it spread so bad, they have a big citrus industry where there's miles and miles of nothing but citrus, and with us, it's a little bit more scattered. So I think it's going to take a while for it to spread, but I'm afraid it's one of those things that unless something biologically or genetically comes along to help us, it's gonna be a problem for our citrus in the area. But it just may take longer than it's taken in other places.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't want to ask.
Well, I'm not discouraging people from planting citrus.
Yeah,
it's not that bad, but. Yep. It's something to be aware of.
Something to be aware of. Yeah, boy, I'll tell you, my Clemenulus this year, John, was maybe the best citrus fruit I've ever gotten off of a tree. It's just finally got to that point. It's about 8 or 9 years old. Oh, gosh, it was so good.
Well, this was a great year for citrus, and at least in my narrow community, just everybody I talked to had good citrus.
Yep, everything, all my citrus were great except for the Satsuma, oddly. But I think maybe some of the late frost in this winter got it. So
our varieties that normally are a little bland and not the best were good this year. The Boshi Benny was a good one.
Yep,
and, it was a good year.
Yep, John, I could talk to you the rest of the morning, but you got business to do. Let's catch up some again. Thank you for coming on and talking to us. Have a great day in the woods.
Sure thing. No problem.
All right, John. Thanks. All right, folks. We're going to be back. That was too much fun. I pushed the break too long. Charlie, I'm sorry.
Because everything on the phone, you got to get down. On your bended knees, I ain't going to. I dig no more taters. I decline, I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything's on the phone, you know you got to go. I get down on your bending knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, Vanna, hold on. I'm going to get to you. I'm glad you called. So it was fun. I'm glad you made me call, John. Listen, I wanted to answer a few little questions here. Tony in Fowl River said he had put a fluorescent light on his new tomatoes during those cloudy days and left it on. And now he's got some white tips on his pepper plants. Maybe some of his tomato plants, too. Let me tell you about those white tips. There are a couple of things. One, I don't know about peppers. Tomatoes do not like 24-hour-a-day light. That's true. And they can have some physiological reactions to that aren't good. I don't know that that's the case. The white tipping that we often see this time of year is often from fertilization. So, Tony, if you fertilized... I'm more likely to blame the fertilizer if you put for it, but I think they're going to grow out of it. I think you're going to be fine. And let me say, folks, if you've got anything under black lights, you don't need them under black lights anymore. Of course, you don't need any of those funky lights anymore. We are not growing illegal drugs here. We can put them out in the full sunlight. Nothing wrong with that. And they need the sunlight this time of year. Go ahead and put them out. They'll be fine. You might bring them in at night just because the night temperature is a little cool. But it's too early for peppers, but it's about time to plant tomatoes. If you've got some sizable tomatoes, let's talk about how to transition them to the garden because we need to transition them pretty fast here. John agrees with me. And when John agrees with me, I think, boy, I must be saying something right. So there it is. There it is. So Dan's got his speakers outside now, so he doesn't need the black lights inside anymore. We're in great shape. Vanna?
Yes, sir.
So I got John. Did you hear what he said?
I know. It didn't sound like he had really seen the picture because he didn't get the wow factor, but anyway.
Yeah.
I wrote down what he said, and I'm looking on the internet too. It says some of this can be it could be a fungus, arthritis disease. I don't know.
So let me ask you first before you do the copper sprays. Let me just ask, Were there any brown or silver or pink lesions on any of these fruits?
Look, maybe a little slightly brown, but mostly just the lumps.
Just the lumps.
The lumpy appearance. So, but they tasted fine. I wasn't afraid to eat them because I knew the lady who owns the tree, and it's an old tree.
Right.
Had not sprayed.
Yeah, no, and no, it's fine. And a lot of citrus pests actually can increase it's weird. They actually don't seem to affect the flavor of the fruit at all. Some diseases do, but some pests don't, and some fungal diseases don't. But I think your fruit's fine to eat. I don't think it's citrus scab, though. I just have a feeling it wasn't. I think something weird must have happened this past year. Maybe it didn't produce this. Did you say the tree was full of fruit?
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, lots of fruit.
Lots of fruit.
She brought me boxes of it.
So, so.
Well, I gave the ones that weren't lumpy I shared the ones that weren't lumpy with some other people, but yeah. I kept the lumpy ones and ate them.
And the lumpy fruits were only in one spot on the tree.
That I cannot tell you because I wasn't picking them.
Yeah, yeah. So, something funky happened, and I don't know whether. Yeah, something early on, very early on in that citrus development happened is my guess. And it could have been.
Could have been even the weather, like you said in the beginning, too.
Yeah, yeah. And it could be
a lot of rain.
It could be, and it could be that the skin was damaged and it reacted to it. And that could have been from hard blowing sand or grit or from birds messing with it. Yeah. It's peculiar, but I don't think it's a severe disease. If it were scab, we'd have seen other symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you, my vote is, and here's what I would suggest, because the copper is got to be applied very carefully. Copper fungicides are kind of nice because they don't affect humans that much, and they don't affect a lot of other things, but they can be what we call phytotoxic. They can affect plants if they're not applied very carefully. Mm-hmm. So you want to be careful about applying a copper fungicide, which if you need it, let's do it. But I don't know that you need it, and you need to be very careful about how you apply it. So I'm going to tell you that let's let that tree go another year, and if we see it again, then we're going to come back at it. And if we don't see it again, we will forever until our dying day be plagued by this mystery.
Well, thank you for your help, and I'll let you know if the fruit all turns out well next year, and then we'll say, okay, we just have to consider that.
Yep, yep. Well, Vanna, good to hear from you. Thanks for pestering me long enough until I called John, because it was sure good to talk to him.
Yes, and thank him as well, please. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Vanna. So there it is. John and I talked about these citrus diseases, and there's some really severe ones out there. When they arrive and when they become endemic here, it's going to be lots worse than coronavirus. Let me just tell you. They are serious diseases where citrus are concerned. They really are very damaging. And they are going to make it very hard to grow citrus. We hope, and John has a hope, and I have some hope too, that we don't have the same conditions for spread that they have in California or Florida, where it is. I want you to know, it's devastating the citrus industry. It's gotten. Here's the funny thing. Here's how bad it is in Florida right now. You remember those citrus cleaners that you used to use, the citrus-based cleaners that people used to use? Citrus Sol or whatever they call them, which are very effective. they actually are having a hard time finding enough peels to make the citrus cleaners because so many citrus growers are going out of business. Because they can't maintain their crops, they can't maintain it's a catastrophe in Florida for the citrus industry. It's really bad. It's getting to be that way in California. It's going to be interesting to see where we get our citrus from. What's interesting is that it hasn't become endemic here yet, the two big diseases, citrus canker and green dragon. And I'm going to tell you what we need to do to stop it from becoming endemic here as soon as we come back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Lots of questions this morning. My good friend David Hubble, who does so much for cooking and eating and exploring Gulf Coast food traditions and gardens, has accused me of living in a Disney movie. I'm telling you, David, it's better than a Disney movie. It's better than a Disney movie. Zippity doo dah. Birds singing on my shoulder, and you know it's a great thing. You can live in better than a Disney movie too. Just go outside today, listen to the birds sing back to them. There it is. There it is. So a bunch of different questions. Brian, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Plant them when you can, and you'll be fine. Broken leg, dadgummit. But you'll be fine. You'll be fine to wait a week or two. I think the sooner the better, but you'll be fine. Can you shade this? So this raises the interesting question: can't we just shade tomato plants in summer? Well, here's the problem: the problem isn't daytime temperatures; the problem is nighttime temperatures here along the Gulf Coast. So shade don't help. It's the nighttime temperatures that are the problem because our nighttime temperatures don't drop. Our daytime temperatures don't get excessively high for tomatoes. Most of the time, our nighttime temperatures are in the range in which tomatoes will still produce fruit, our daytime temperatures. It's our nighttime temperatures that get out of hand here on the Gulf Coast. They just don't get low enough. And this causes a big problem in terms of tomato respiration and tomato pollination. So, and photosynthesis. And if you put the shade cloth, you've kind of, it's kind of a double whammy. Because one, the shade cloth reduces the amount of photosynthesis the plant does during the day. And the problem with the high night temperatures is that the plant wastes its photosynthetic energy on respiration. So it's like you kind of cut it to your I don't know, what is the right thing? You're burning the tomato at both ends. So I don't, in general, shade is not a good solution for tomatoes here along the Gulf Coast. A little bit of afternoon shade for a few hours might be good. Shade all day would be a big problem. You know, I would say if you could get a little more shade between 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock, that's probably okay. But it needs the sunlight, full sunlight, the rest of the time. And it's really hard to achieve that. So you can do it with a very high trees. Yeah, that longleaf is perfect for that. Because the light shines in through the edges, live oaks would be terrible for that because there's no light from the edge. So these are the things, and that's why we stress you really got to do this early because it's the high night temperatures that are the problem, and it's not a way to fix that, not an easy way to fix that. John, I see you got nasturtiums up and going. And you know, I think, John, I think the peat pots are the perfect thing to do for the nasturtiums. Do not – nasturtiums have funky little roots. They're kind of coarse roots initially, and they don't really anchor well. So leave them in the pots when you plant those nasturtiums for sure. I would say the point of having peat pots is that you really don't have to disturb the roots. And for most of the plants that you've got there and for the timing here, you're going to be just fine. Plant the whole pot. There is a small concern that leaving the edge of the peat pot exposed, you know, I don't think that makes a difference here. Honestly, I don't think it makes a difference. So just plant the whole peat pot. There you go. They'll grow right through it, and they'll do it pretty quickly. My only issue with peat pots is that the peat pots deteriorate so quickly in this climate that sometimes they deteriorate before I can get them in the ground. And I'm using some different techniques, which we can talk about later, for growing things out. Nasturtiums, by the way, do not like they are perfect for growing in pots that you don't have to disturb the roots, that you don't have to pop them out of the pots. And that's something I'm discovering that this year. I'm really pleased with how things are working. I got a system this year uses little cloth bags, and especially made. They're not expensive. They're really great. And they've kind of been perfect for things like nasturtium. So, John, plant the whole peat thing. That's right. Greg, those are great pictures of the yard. I am intrigued by this moth or butterfly. So I'm gonna figure it out. I'm gonna figure out what's going on with that. I don't know which one that is, but I'm gonna figure it out. So there that is. Who am I missing? Kumquats. Jim in Georgetown is asking, can you pick the kumquats now? You know, I think the great thing about kumquats, Jim, is they don't go bad. I don't think they really – they don't have the they don't have such a narrow window for picking. They can go bad, but I don't think they have such a narrow window for picking. So I think you're fine. And a lot of people do have more kumquats than they can possibly use, and there's lots of things in our lives, and we sometimes don't get to the kumquats as soon as we like, and I think that's okay. I think kumquats are more tolerant of that than other citrus, at least in my experience. I have had kumquats late. I've had them early, and they're all good, So we're going to – I think you're just fine. I think you're just fine. Well, we've got a lot of questions to answer today, a lot of things to think about for today's show. And we're going to be back. Is it time to report lime tree and hibiscus? I think there is a typo there, and we're going to figure out what that typo is. Is it time to report? Any rate, send me that message back and amend the word report so I'll know exactly what it is. Greg keeps sending me more interesting pictures, which is really interesting. Dan sends me a picture of Matt's wild cherry. And let me add this real quickly, because I think it's a good point right now. Sorry for all these questions coming in at once. They're being texted. And sometimes I have to think through them all. Dan sends me a nice picture of a seed packet from Southern Exposure Seed Exchange. I think they have very pretty seed packets, don't you, Dan? I really like their seed packets. They're very clean. Well, they're not clean, but they're very... I don't know. I just like them. They're pleasant. Southern Exposure Seed Exchange, Matt's Wild Cherry, and he's going to plant them late as an experiment. Now, let me tell you, folks, if you're going to plant your tomatoes late from seed, the seed to use would be the smaller tomatoes and tomatoes that are half wild. And Matt's Wild Cherry, as the name says, is about half wild. It's from... And it is absolutely delicious. It's a great tomato. It does great. And I would say, yeah, you're probably going to do okay, because the smaller tomatoes keep producing even in spite of hot nights. They will reduce it, but for some reason they keep producing. They don't seem to be as susceptible to our hot nights. So that's a good one. There is another thing I'll tell you about tomatoes. And I sometimes tell people, if you want to start a big tomato and you want to grow big tomatoes, and you're just starting the seed now, I would tell you, hold on to the seed for a few weeks and plant it, and start your seeds in April, so that you can, and late April, so that you can put those tomatoes out sometime in June. I know that sounds crazy, but it makes perfect sense. Because if you put those tomatoes out as 6 to 18-inch transplants in June, they're going to be fruiting during the drier days of September and October when the nights aren't so hot, and you'll do okay. Still think now's the best time if you can manage it. We're going to do this little news thing and some weather things, and then we're going to be back.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played.